Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety from the Lighthouse Hockey Podcast Network. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me this evening via Zencaster is my friend Michael Leboff. And Mike, Islanders are on a roll. They have points in eight straight. They've won, I don't know, three, four, something in a row. And I don't know, it's just a fun time, man. They've turned around whatever problems they had earlier, they have wiped away and are right back in the thick of this race. And in fact, are in second place, I believe, right now in the division.
It's one of my favorite features of these Barry Trotz Islanders is that, like, when they figure it out, it's not just like a one game kind of thing. Like, they show signs of, like, okay, there's some process things going right. They might not win the game that those process things are happening in, and then all of a sudden, but you know, like, okay, they're bubbling, and then they start to, like, rattle off wins, and you start to question why you ever doubted them to begin with. And then obviously, the shoe fits on the other foot too with that kind of thing. Cause when things go awry, you start to see it a little earlier and then you're like, oh God, why did I ever think this team was good? But, they've just looked, like a more drastic version of themselves from the bubble. And when I say that, I mean, like, cause their defensive game has been so good. It's like the bubble when they were rolling in the bubble, it was kind of good two-way hockey. Obviously the defense was still the star of the show, but this time it's just like, it's clear that this team is just so well drilled on where to be and when things are going a little off kilter on the ice, like how to shell up properly to make sure that they protect the slot and sweep rebounds and just kind of bend and not break until they get a shift change. And it's just like all the good features of Barry Trotz hockey have kind of risen to the surface. And they're doing it with a roster that is not just, where nobody's mad about the roster right now, it seems like, which is a first for this season, at least. And
yes.
And you see why, like fans have been clamoring for, a roster that kind of looks like this for this whole season, because you're like, look, if they do play well, if you play well with these four lines and these six defensemen, you're going to the separation between you and the team that you're playing against is going to be bigger. And that's what it is. And it's been great. It's been fun, boring hockey.
Yeah. It's very rare to have a consensus amongst Islanders fans, particularly when it comes to the lineup. There's always somebody who's like, oh, I got to get this guy in there or whatever. But when the lineup was announced for Tuesday's game, which we're going to talk right off the bat, and it involved the return of Anthony Beauvillier and the sending to the taxi squad of Leo Komarov, a guy who, in fairness, had played very well over the last couple of games, that was a kind of a huge move because it meant Oliver Wahlstrom stayed in the lineup. And not only that, but something that we had talked about earlier was Beauvillier playing with JG Pageau, figuring that, those two guys had a chemistry. Beauvillier is coming back from a long injury. This would be a great place to start. And lo and behold, that's where he was. So Beauvillier, Pageau, Wahlstrom was a line. The Nelson, Eberle, Dalcol line, which had worked pretty well, was still a line. Then you had Barzell, Eberle, Lee, and Bailey, and then obviously the third line. So everything sort of clicked into place. And I want to start with Tuesday's game. It was a 3-0 shutout in favor of the Islanders. It was their third game in four nights. You could kind of see them running out of gas a little bit. The Sabres coming off a 15-day break. Let's be honest, they're not the most talented team in the league. The Sabres are, even without that kind of break. The gas was starting to come out a little bit, and they were kind of, there was a big push at the second half of the third period. But that game, I think, to me and a lot of other people, is going to be remembered mainly for being Ilya Sorokin's first win and first shutout, and really our first glimpse of something that you and I and a lot of other people had been looking forward to, which is this guy just coming in and absolutely dominating a game. He made 20 saves. At least a quarter of them were of the fairly spectacular variety. Like, guys in front, again, the Sabres aren't exactly the sharpest shooting team in the league, but dudes in front, there was a couple of breakdowns in the slot, and Sorokin was there for every single one of them. He got a little lucky on one that bounced off, I think, his leg in the post. They had one called back. It was a power play goal. They got called back because Jack Eichel was offsides. That would have been a goal on just about anybody. I mean, if he had, even if he had let that in, hey, you know what? That's fine. But he was fantastic, and I don't want to, you know, take anything away from him. He was great, and that was, again, a glimpse of what you wanted to see from this team going forward. Young players in position, to gain Barry Trotz's trust, and Ilya Sorokin in goal, stealing games. And I mean, you and I were talking throughout it, and at one point you were like, is this real? And I was thinking to myself, yes, this is real. This guy's stealing this game, not stealing the game, but like robbing guys and making these crazy saves is real. And it's what we've waited for this whole time. And it was great to actually see it in person, you know?
And the thing that was so, there's so many things like to unpack about that start. And the thing that was so mesmerizing about it was how quiet he is. Like in he's making these 10 bell saves going side to side, full stretch. And it's you're just watching it happen, and you're seeing it, and you're like, he doesn't look like he's panicking to get over there. Like Rick DiPietro, for all of Rick's faults in every different way, he would make these saves, like, you know, he'd make these acrobatic saves. But when Rick would go side to side to rob someone with a glove or whatever, there were like 18 different body parts moving. And then he, of course, you know, would flash the leather, which Sorokin did yesterday a couple of times, but like it was always a little bit of a carnival whenever Rick made a big save like that. For Sorokin, you're seeing it happen. Like there was one pass that went across. I can't remember who he ended up making the save on. I think it actually might've been Olofsson. And he just, you know, went side to side so smoothly. And you're like, wow, this is developing really slowly, I feel like. But then you realize when you see the replay, like, no, it wasn't developing slowly. It was just developing calmly. And he's just so smooth going side to side to get across that you're like, I haven't seen anything, you know, kind of like that before. There's like no panic in him at all. I was joking around with you, and that he seems to be like of that, of that Russian, like, scientist stereotype. Like I fully expect him to just like, see him like a big, one of those big like Leo Tolstoy novels, like bulging out of his back of his pants or something, and to see him like reading it in the middle of a game. Like I always talk about Barzal as like the type of player who I think should be skating around with like a rose in between his teeth, because it's just like he's just so romantic to watch. And then, but like Sorokin on the other end is like, this guy, he should have like beakers and like smoke coming out of in front of him, and he should be reading, and there should be classical music playing behind him and stuff. Because he just gives off that vibe of that like Einsteinian vibe, and it kind of comes through in his play. Like it's just like his angles are just like there, and you can tell that like there's something truly special there. And sure, it's, you know, it's been one win, so rein it in, Mike. But like in that win, you're like those in these moments, you're just like, holy crap, like. I don't know if I've seen there were a couple of saves yesterday that I don't know if I've ever seen any goalie make that save look that easy and that economical before in my life.
He played really what you would call a flawless game. Like obviously they didn't give any goals, and again the one that was called back would have been a goal, but I mean even that one you couldn't have faulted him on. But there was not one rebound in the wrong spot, not one mistake, you know, cue anywhere that you could see him kind of scrambling back, like you said, to pick up, to cover for a mistake that he made. He was just flawless. And like, yeah, he was just incredibly calm. And the funny thing is, if you look back on his previous starts, obviously the one against the Rangers, where he didn't know he was starting until about 15 to 20 minutes before the game. He looked, we talked about it. His angles were off. Something just seemed kind of wacky about it, but the team itself stunk anyway. So, I mean, what are you going to do? He played a game against the Flyers and it was better, but you can see that things were kind of still had a couple of kinks to work out. There were no kinks in this game, and there might be later on. We'll see how the rotation goes going forward, but you know, there were no kinks in this game. Like there was nothing that you would think, wow, this guy is really, you know, he just had it so locked down. And if you think back to the game he played 2 weeks ago against the Flyers, when, you know, again, he wasn't terrible, but like he had some stuff to work out. You're like, boy, what kind of practices was this guy going through? And like, how tight is his mental preparation, and how good are the goalie coaches to get him to this point where he was just like a robot out there? And it was great to see. The game itself was definitely the least exciting of the two. I thought the funniest thing about the game was that the same two guys scored and the same two in the first periods of both games in almost the exact same way. Anders Lee from a beautiful feed from Noah Dobson and potted home one. He's having a great season, by the way, Lee. We need to do an episode on him because he's just, I think he's got seven goals now, I think, or six goals. And he had the empty netter too to seal it.
In a weird way, like that goal that the Islanders scored, like that is the exact type of goal that I'm like, well, Ilya Sorokin is not going to give that up. Like, because it was side to side. Like, it was a weird play because, like, you didn't expect that pass to go. That pass was like a true wall to wall almost pass. And Kyle Poso was looking the wrong way and whatever. But Carter Hutton was like so. Carter Hutton was so far past the play that, like, even the weird angle that Lee shot it at was like, you're like, wow, the goalie, if he even moved over, if he read that play right, he would easily have taken that off the chest. But that's like the play that I'm like, wow, like Sorokin moves so well side to side. He would have had that one.
Yeah. Lee was almost on the red line at that point when he actually shot that thing. It was almost like a really super tight angle. But it was great. And then JG Pageau a few minutes later from the exact opposite side of where he had scored the night before with almost the same exact play. He was on the rush off turnover and he just zapped it by Carter Hutton in that case. And the Islanders, that was really all they needed. You know, the second period was mostly Sabres, but they only came away with three shots on goal, which just goes to show you both how tightly the Islanders can play defense and, you know, how little the Sabres actually tried to get shots on net, because they spent the entire period, it felt like, almost in the Islanders' zone and just didn't come away with anything. And then in the third, they were better. Again, they almost got that power play goal. And from that point on, the Islanders snapped back into position. And at that point, they kind of took over. And once Hutton was pulled for the extra attacker, the Sabres didn't really have much of anything at all. So that was a pretty cool win. It was a lot of fun to see, again, on back-to-backs. You know, if you can get 4 points on a back-to-back night, man, you're doing something pretty well, because, you know, normally you'd think, split's fine, but to grab all 4 points is awesome. The night before, on Monday, was a 3-1 win. Again, 2-0 Islanders in the first period. Varlamov made another 20 saves. He was absolutely outstanding. Victor Olofsson scored a power play goal in that one. That's all that guy does, is score power play goals. And I wonder what the Islanders would look like if they had him on their team scoring power play goals. But then the Islanders got a 2-goal lead right back. Nelson got his own power play goal, which is nice to see him chipping in again. Varlamov locked it down. The Islanders, though, as you've no doubt already heard, gave up 0 shots on goal in the third period, which is something they had never apparently done in their entire history. Something that the Sabres had not done, getting no shots on goal, they hadn't done in 10 years. And it was pretty remarkable. It didn't feel like it, again, because it felt like they had zone time, but they just didn't. You know, half of the period goes by, and you're like, why do they have no shots on goal? And then it just, well, surely they'll get, you know, something. And then the game ends, and you're like, they had no shots on goal the entire period. That's not a way to mount a comeback. I mean, they were only down 3-1 at that point, and it just wasn't happening. And so that was, I mean, I want to say between that one and maybe Saturday's game, which we'll talk about in a second against the Bruins, that's sort of like the prototypical Islanders hockey game. It's like it's Barry Trotz hockey. You just don't give up any shots. You score when you have the opportunities and you walk out with a victory. And I mean, again, people can claim that the Islanders are boring, but I didn't think that game was boring at all. I thought it worked. And I think that if you think the game is boring, that's probably because your team isn't taking any shots on goal, which is something you as a fan want to see them do. So to me, it wasn't boring, but I guess to a Sabres fan, it might've been boring, and I feel bad for them because their team's, it's bad enough. They sit around for 2 weeks because of a COVID outbreak, and now they're come back and drop right into last place. And, you know, it's going to be hard to kind of climb out, but, you know, again, you see the back-to-back on the schedule, and you really can't ask for much more than that. And thanks to those 4 points, the Islanders are just a couple points behind the Bruins in first place and, 1 point ahead of the Flyers, for second, which is great.
Yeah, that game on Monday was, and the two games, the Bruins win and then that Sabres game, kind of were like continuations of each other. I feel like the Islanders really played a great game against the Bruins and carried that in that same style into that Sabres game. And there's a couple things, like the Varlamov situation. Lou Lamoriello's made a couple of mistakes. Definitely in personnel wise in his tenure as Islanders GM, but the Varlamov move, like we both love Robin Leonard. I'll love Robin Leonard forever. But it basically has been a like for like switch in terms of what, you know, their production in, you know, Leonard maybe had, you know, his numbers were a little bit better last year than Varlamov, but the way that Varlamov's played this year, like, and the way he was in the bubble, it's just like, you know, nobody is complaining about that deal, which was something that I didn't anticipate, to be happening. I thought that people would that deal probably would have been a little bit of an egg on his face, but on Lou's face, but it's looked good. And he's been really, really just solid from basically, you know, on the bubble on, and he had one bad game, and he kind of wore it on the chin too, because that was the game that Sorokin was in the taxi squad, and for some reason Corey Schneider wasn't even trusted enough for mop up duty. But other than that, like, he's been you know, one of the best goalies in the league so far. So you just can't really complain about what he's done. He's probably, him and Barzal are probably neck and neck in MVP for the Islanders. And then the other thing was, like, you mentioned it, like, Komarov had a couple of really good games in a row, and that was what was so shocking to me, was that that Barry actually sat him, because of, you know, those were probably the two best games we've seen out of Uncle Leo in maybe, you know, since his first season on the island, when he would have, like, these little blips with Valpilipula. But like, the fact that he trusts Oliver Wahlstrom is actually, like, to the rest of the hockey world, like, a very, very, very minor development, because, you know, to people who are maybe don't pay attention to the Islanders, Oliver Wahlstrom playing over Leo Komarov is, you know, just logic. But to Islander fans, we're like, this is a big moment. And it dawned on me, I can't remember the Islanders I was talking about it with my friend Mike, and he said Marc-Andre Bergeron for this question was, I can't remember the last time the Islanders have had a player who is so trigger happy, especially a forward. I mean, Brad
since,
Boyce,
since Wahlstrom, you mean, basically?
Yeah, Wahlstrom basically being that guy. Like, have you seen, can you recall an Islander who, when he gets the puck, he just, his, like, GPS turns him to the net and he just shoots it. And that's it. It's just like, and it's an interesting wrinkle to a team that's been so predictable, because the Islanders have been so drilled into, you know, passing up, you know, a shot that might get blocked or a shot from the point to try to find these high quality chances. Whereas Wahlstrom is a little bit of a wild card in that situation, and his line mates they're good for it, because, like, Pageau is always buzzing around the net. He has a nose for the puck. So when Wahlstrom shoots a puck and it hits off a shin, or a goalie makes a save, like, Pageau, Beauvillier, these are two good players who are nifty around in those, like, dirty areas to find pucks and deposit them where they're supposed to go. But, like, in I just can't think of a player who I can remember, you know, maybe on some bad teams, but, like, I really can't. I would actually like to hear from other people, like, who is the last, like, super trigger happy player? Because it's so foreign to me.
They've never really had. If anything, it's been the exact opposite. They've had guys for too long that just, like, didn't want to take shots at all.
Right.
Yeah, Bailey obviously being the thread that kind of ties all those together. You always wanted them to shoot more, and then you had guys like Molson who would score off of, like, deflections and things hanging around the net, so he didn't really even have to shoot that many times either. No, I can't even. I mean, I don't know, Ziggy Palfy maybe. I don't even know. I guess Bergeron is one guy. I guess Campoli is probably another guy, but I'd have to look at the numbers. I'm just probably misremembering. But that's a good one. And he is a bit of a wild card. Yeah, forwards. Yeah, they don't. They've never. Mike Bossy, maybe. I don't even know. Like, they just. Wahlstrom is a bit of a wild card. And if you watch Barry Trotz's post game thing, somebody right off the bat asked him about trust and Wahlstrom, and he was like, "Yeah, he's given me a reason to put him out there." And basically, you know, he's doing things without the puck. You know, he still only has the one goal and one assist this year, so it's not like he's lighting up the scoreboard. But he's doing the things that Barry wants him to do, which is, you know, don't be a liability on defense. He's hitting guys. He's making his impact felt there, and, you know, he's working within the structure of his line mates, like you said, to create scoring chances the way Barry wants. And I don't think it's ever that Barry doesn't want them to shoot. I think he wants them to take opportunities that are high danger. He doesn't just want people to shoot and kind of from anywhere. So, you know, if he's going to get those chances and they're presented to him, why not shoot? Sure, why not? And if he hits the net, even better. So, I, you know, as long as he's in there, I think people are going to be happy. Now, I'm sure that, you know, here we are talking about this, and the Islanders have two games coming up we're going to talk about after the break. I'm sure Uncle Leo is going to get into another game eventually, but it has been fun. And Kiefer Bellows has been sitting out for this whole time. And again, Michael Dak Cole, same kind of thing as Wahlstrom. He hasn't scored, but you know, he works well within the context of his line, and him and Eberle and Nelson are able to kind of cycle in the zone, keep the puck in the zone and work their way around. And Eberle is usually the one who ends up with the scoring chances, and hey, whatever works, you know, it'll work for them. So if they can keep this going, they can definitely, you know, again, keep racking up points. The streak is at 8 games now with a point. And they just need these. Their season is essentially a quarter over, and they're looking pretty good so far. You know, let's just talk real quick about that Bruins game on Saturday. Arguably the best game of the whole bunch for the Islanders, especially against a team that has been proven time and again to be a tough one for them. You know, I didn't think that they would win 2 games against the Bruins in the same season, and they did it within the same month, which is really remarkable. The Bruins came out and were all over the Islanders for about 10 minutes. They took a 1-0 lead. And then from that point on, it was all Islanders. They tied it. They took a lead. And they eventually gave it up just before the end of the period, Patrice Bergeron. But then it was all Islanders in the third. And then Barzal had a beautiful power play goal. And then Komarov, again, scores you know, for a shorthanded goal. And it was done. It was a 4-2 win. And, you know, again, could have been – Lou Lamoriello called it their best game of the season. And, you know, I mean, he's seen them all, so I'm not going to argue with him. And it was something. I did not expect that. You go into a game like that thinking you maybe get a split or, you know, you get a point out of it. That's pretty good. To get 2 points and to knock out the team in first place is huge. And, I mean, they play the Bruins again this month. We'll talk about the upcoming schedule, too, in a second. But, you know, getting 2 wins against that team in the same season has got to be a real confidence building thing. Like now you look at those guys and you're like, all right, well, we can beat them. They've beaten Rask now. Maybe he didn't have the best game on Saturday, but he's still Tuukka Rask. He's still pretty good. Yeah, I guess they've got to be feeling pretty good about themselves, and we'll see if they can continue to do this.
The Bruins thing, there's a couple of different things that are really encouraging. One, they're the only team in the league that has, or in the division, I guess, because that's the schedule, but they're the only team that hasn't allowed the Bruins to take a point off them. The Islanders have taken all 4 points allotted in those games. And the Bruins were, I think they're 10-2-2, and those 2 regulation losses, like I said, it came against the Islanders. So what does that show you? This shows you that if you know, these 2 teams do end up playing in the playoffs, like, there is a reason to believe, because not only were these wins, especially the last one, not only were they, you know, was it good to get a win, but the Islanders didn't look out of place. Like, I remember last February, because I think it was like maybe the second to last game that I went to when they played the Bruins at the Coliseum. I think they got smoked 4-0 or something. And within the first 2 shifts of the game, it was over. You're just like, wow, like the Bruins have a way of just clamping like the life out of their opponent. If the opponent allows them to, which is usually making a mistake and letting them score and get a lead. But that the difference between that game and this game was the Islanders never really did that. They kind of imposed their will on Boston, which very few teams do. And that's just like super encouraging when you can really think about what the season's going to look like for the next couple months and into the playoffs if the Islanders get there, because like there's no reason to. I'm sure there's reason the Bruins are still the boogeyman in this division. But you know, if you can get these results, you have a reason, not just for the players, but for fans, like, to not, you know, be hiding behind your sofa, going into the series. And the other thing too, is like I know the Flyers have been dealing with, their protocol stuff. So they haven't really been playing, but the other teams in the division, especially the contenders, are all messes. Like the Penguins are a mess. The Capitals are a bit of a mess. And this is not including the Bruins. The Rangers have obviously kind of cratered. Like, the Islanders are finding their game while the other teams are still trying to sort their stuff out. So these wins kind of came at like a perfect time. And don't forget that last year the Islanders went on that crazy point streak. Like, It's I'm not saying they're going to do that again, but the way they're playing now is like it's in this like matter of fact way, getting good goaltending, whatever. That's kind of how it was. Like there was no panic when they went down against the Bruins. There was no panic when they tied it up. There was no panic when the Sabres, you know, they hemmed the Islanders in for 2 minutes at the end of the second period yesterday. And Barry Trotz, I thought very, very kind of in like a cunning way, like instead of being like, you know, we got lucky, we survived that. He kind of complimented the players for surviving that shift, being like, we have, you know, we have a plan in place when that stuff happens, and they executed it, which you don't really hear coaches say that when you know, during a shift or about a shift like that. But these are like kind of like these, the Islanders, like I said in the beginning of the episode, like they give off like these signs of bigger things to come, and you know, knock on wood, that this is one of the, you know, this is part of a bigger kind of streak. I mean, obviously 8-game point streak or whatever they're on right now is nothing to shake a stick at, especially when you're playing basically good teams every night. So I'm just like, I'm confident that there's something bigger to come. I shouldn't say I'm not counting on it, because who knows, like an injury or whatever. But I feel for the first time this season, like I feel a little bit like at peace with like the way that things are going.
Yeah. Yeah. They definitely have found their groove after a couple of games. And, you know, we talked about it too, like when they're not in their groove, it makes you question everything in life. And then when they do, you're like, oh yeah, right, I forgot about these guys, you know, and it all stems from one line feeding off the next. So it's pretty good. We are going to talk about their upcoming games and whether or not to be worried about them. One of those teams you mentioned as a mess is right on the horizon, so we'll talk about them. Before we get to the break, a reminder to leave us a review on iTunes and to put your Twitter handle in there for a chance to win some Islanders swag from eBay. Our last winner is still not contacted you, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I had reached out to Carl on Instagram, but I've yet to hear from him. But
yeah,
I will get him his eBay swag come hell or high water.
So Carl, if you're out there, please contact Mike and collect your swag as soon as possible. But thanks. Yeah, leave us a review on iTunes with your Twitter handle in it, and we'll have a new winner at the end of the month. Okay, when we come back, we'll talk about the next games on the horizon. Our favorite sponsor is VintageIceHockey.com, where you can buy t-shirts, hoodies, and mugs featuring over 100 classic hockey logos. They also have our Al Arbor t-shirts, which you can buy there. And our portion of the sales go directly to Center for Dementia Research. You can use the code LIGHTHOUSE15, save 15%. You can also pre-order your Columbus Chill jerseys. These are awesome. If you remember hockey in the 90s, teams started using some weird, especially minor league teams started using some weird designs, and the Columbus Chill right up there. It's like a vertical upside down logo. It's really cool. And if you're into that kind of stuff, you can't resist. So you can pre-order those right now, VintageIceHockey.com. So go there today. Okay. So the Islanders have two more games this week and then another one on Monday. The two games this week are both against the Penguins, Thursday and Saturday. They played the Penguins last Thursday, lost in a shootout, which was a hugely disappointing result because they had played pretty well. And Matt Barzal had scored a goal in the third period that will live on beyond all of us, where he turned poor rookie Pierre-Olivier Joseph inside out. And it was pretty cool. And you thought, wow, that's the end of that. And then the Penguins came back and scored and won the shootout. But since then, like you said before, the Penguins have been a bit of a mess. They have only two regulation wins this season, which is pretty remarkable. They're in, I think, fourth place right now, but I mean, man, that's not good. You're going to need those as a tiebreaker. The Islanders, by the way, have, 8, I believe, and the Bruins have 10. So the Islanders are doing pretty well in that department. But, you know, the Penguins are a little bit like the Bruins in that I think the Islanders always have a bit of a kind of intimidation factor against them, despite the fact that they play them all the time and have beaten them in the playoffs. There's always that feeling, I think. And again, taking points from these guys would be a huge thing, and especially playing them in two, you know, twice in the same week. And then they have a Monday game against the Sabres again, and then two more games against the Penguins after that. So these are huge for setting up the next two, and the, you know, memory of losing that shootout must still be fresh in the Islanders' memories, even though it was followed up by three wins. They need to get points against these guys because they're going to be right behind them no matter what all season long. So it's going to be huge. And to strike now while they're in a bit of disarray would be, I think, a good thing. That's what I'm hoping for anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically this is like a time when the Islanders can not only do themselves a huge favor by getting points, but do the whole division some favor and kind of cause some separation between the Penguins and the top of the division. The Penguins are doing the thing again where like I never know who's playing for them and who's hurt. Like someone gets hurt in like the strangest ways every like morning skate or whatever. The goaltending has been, you know, pretty terrible for them too. So it's like this is as flawed as the Penguins have been since, you know, Andy Chiodo was like playing goal for them in like Crosby's first season. So like just to be able to kind of push them away. And I was saying in the beginning of the season, like the key in this kind of race is like, you just don't want to be cut adrift. Like you need to be able to collect points and hang with teams as deep into the season as possible to kind of outlast. Cause you know, the nature of the schedule is that some teams are going to just fall off. And you just, if that ends up being the Penguins, well, that would be wonderful, but you just don't want it to happen to you. And just because the Islanders are on the streak right now doesn't mean there's any reason to like kind of relax. Like I said, I was at peace. I'm not relaxed. Like they're still what, 4 points ahead of the playoff cutoff line, and they played one more game than I think Pittsburgh, who was the next team, and the Devils have only played 10 games, and you know they look like they're going to be a gnat all season. So like there's no reason right now, you know, for the Islanders to kind of just capitulate, and it doesn't look like there's one coming. But that doesn't mean it can't happen. Like, you know, this is such a weird sport and things go awry pretty quickly. But the way the schedule is set up with getting 2 games against Buffalo and or 3, I guess, with these Penguins games at the time, like this is the right time to be playing the Penguins. So they need to take, you know, the majority of the points in these mini series, no matter if it's against Sidney Crosby or not. And look, they look vulnerable, especially with that goaltending. Like the Islanders, I know they're, I think right now, very slight underdogs, but for that first game, which is in Pittsburgh, I believe, right? The first two, but I think it is. But so which tells you that like the Islanders would be favored. Or the
betting market. Both at the Coliseum.
Oh, they are at the Coliseum.
No. These are both in Pittsburgh, and the next weeks are both at the Coliseum.
Gotcha. Yeah. So what that tells you is that the betting market, with when you take out home ice advantage, views the Islanders as the better team right now. And you can't really disagree with that. So they just got to kind of impose their will and hopefully and take the points. And I would like to see. I think it might come in the Buffalo game. I would love to see Trotz go back to Sorokin in one of these games. And that's obviously nothing against Varlamov, but one thing that's going to matter is that having a goaltender who Trotz can kind of rely on behind Varlamov is going to be huge in terms of keeping him fresh. Like it's not just about Sorokin's performances. It's also about like they can't just ride Semyon Varlamov for 48 of the 56 games and then expect him to be fresh in the playoffs. So I'm pretty excited to see when Barry goes back to him and hopefully, you know, he kind of sticks with this lineup because, like you said, like Dalcol and Wahlstrom have given him no reason to take them out of the lineup. And Dalcol, I think it's just been he's been fun to watch. And it's very weird to say that about a guy who literally doesn't score ever.
Doesn't like score.
Ever. He just does not. It's just not. He could be playing. He should be playing with a stick that doesn't have like the blade at the end of it. It should just be like a whacker because when he gets it on his. When he actually gets the puck in front of the net, like you just know it's not going in the net. But he's just been great in every other part of the game. So it's a weird, that line is like weirdly gelled nicely.
I don't know how long Dalcol will be with the Islanders, but let's just say it's like a pretty long period of time, like 6 years or something like that. I don't even know what he's at now. I guess he's at 2, or this is probably, I guess, his second full season, but like parts of the other ones. Let's say he's here for 6 years. I could see him being one of those guys that has like a crazy outlier season. Like he has like, you know, 2 or 3 goals for every season. And then all of a sudden he has like 19 one year. And then he's right back to like 3 or 4 after that. And you're like, what happened to it? You know? So he just has one of those crazy shooting percentage years 1 year. But yeah, it's actually funny because if you told me that a month in which you played the Penguins four times would actually turn out to be one of the easier months in the schedule, I would have said that's completely insane. But if you look at the schedule for March and April, I think that's pretty true. And that's nothing to take nothing away from the Penguins, who, again, are, you know, they might be still, you know, kind of on shaky ground right now, but they're still the Penguins. Like, they're still pretty good. But if you look at the schedule for March, it's a lot of Flyers, a lot of Capitals, more Bruins, and then the Rangers and Devils, who, you know, love nothing more than to beat the Islanders. So this is a chance right now to make some serious headway against a team, like you said, that's got, you know, a bit of a rotating lineup. Their defense, quite frankly, I look at these guys and I'm like, who even are you? Outside of Chris Letang, none of these guys, I recognize at all. Marino is supposed to be good, but I don't know, he looks kind of ordinary to me. The goalies are having lots of trouble too. And, you know, hopefully this doesn't come back to bite me, but, you know, this is a chance to really make up some points. And if you can get four more points against these guys, or at least take three out of the 4 points, that also would be huge too, especially since you're right behind them. So, the whole Brian Burke thing is just weird. I wrote about this week, and it's just like, I just don't get it. Like, I know, you know, you can say what you want about the Penguins, but like, their whole thing is really more of a quiet arrogance. Like, they never really have like loud mouths, like guys who are just like, just barking all the time, just shut up, stop talking. You know, Mario made the Garage League thing, and it was really weird. Like, he even did it as like a press release, you know. That's how they don't do loud mouths in Pittsburgh, at least not the Penguins anyway. But Brian Burke is all loud mouth. Like, he's all mouth. And, you know, he's been successful. Don't get me wrong. He's got a Stanley Cup ring. He had put those good Vancouver teams together. But he's all mouth. And it's just like, I just find it weird. And I wonder if he's some sort of, like, human target, because they know that things are going to be bad. Yeah, maybe they make the playoffs. They're going to make the playoffs. And every time, as long as they have Crosby and Malkin, there's a chance they make the playoffs, right? But, like, eventually, those dudes are going to have to go away. And I wonder if they want him there as sort of like the human target to take all of the abuse while the other guys kind of build a team, a new version of the Penguins around him. Because I just don't get it. I don't think he's going to be there that long, to be honest. I feel like he's going to blow in like a wind, and he's going to say a bunch of stupid stuff. And then 2 years from now, he's going to be gone and back on TV. But I don't know. The whole thing is just weird to me.
It was so strange. Like, and like, even like Ron Hextall, like, there were all these names being bandied about, like Kevin Weeks and Chris Drury, and like, never once did Ron Hextall's name like come across my purview for this job. And I'm like, and I never. But then
when he gets the job, everybody's like, "Oh, that's the guy I thought was going to get it."
Yeah. Well, I had him written down. I just didn't say it because I didn't have the right sources to corroborate. Yeah, okay. Just like how Darren Drager right now is trading Sidney Crosby to like three different teams. Like, yeah, that's what Brian Burke's going to do. Him and Ron Hextall are going to come into Pittsburgh and trade away Sidney Crosby. Jesus. Right. These guys just, they can't help themselves. It's unbelievable. It's been truly unbelievable to watch. You know, the Dragers and Pierre LeBruns of the world during this season with the Canadian division, and now the Burke thing too, because everybody's got a Burkey story. Like, let's all hear it. Like, they're all like, I can't believe. Another big thing when Burke got hired was everybody who works for Sportsnet was like, yeah, he told us he was never going to go back to you know, working in hockey. So I'm actually kind of surprised. I'm going to miss, you know, I'm going to miss sitting next to you in the studio, Brian. Like, guys, he's not like retired. He's not like, you know, you're never not gonna hear from him. He's becoming the president of a hockey team. Like, well, good God, I don't know what they were doing. Like, it was crazy to watch these guys fall over themselves when that happened.
It's not like they're not gonna have him on the radio every single day now. Like, now they can do that, you know. And it's just, I don't know. The bottom of what's that?
No, I was just gonna say it's crazy.
In the bottom of this week's 31 thoughts, Elliot Friedman is like, non-Canadian fans, we hear you. We know that we focus a little too much on the North Division, but we'll try and get better. Okay, well, what makes you think that started this year? Like, it's always been like that.
It's not even that. Like, I don't think they get it. I don't think it's not like we don't care that you're spilling like column ink on the Canadian. It's the way you do it. It's the way that like it's like the way that it's every like Chris Johnston today or yesterday just tweeted a picture of Jimmy Vesey talking to a Manny Malhotra, who's an assistant coach for the Maple Leafs, and wrote, "Wow, this is like the third time he's had a lengthy chat with a coach on the ice in the last 10 days." Like, hey, why are you keeping track of that? It's and like, what, and who cares? Right. Like, this isn't like this. You're not his like parent right. going to pick him, going to like progress reports at school and being like, well, you've had to keep him after class three times in the past week. Like, all right, like he's grounded. Like, good God, they can't help themselves. And this Chris, 2 weeks before that, he was like, he talked about how, I can't remember who on the Leafs got an A, and he was like, this officially cements him as a member of the Leafs leadership group. Like, what did they do? Is it like a Native American thing where like you got to go to the woods and like hunt a bear or something? Like what happens? What do you mean it becomes a member? Yeah, that's what happens. Every team has a couple guys who wear letters on their shirt. Like, you know, Sasha Barkov becoming captain of the Florida Panthers, like, wasn't like a ceremonial thing. Like, and they were like, good God, they can't, they just can't.
No, that's 100%. Yeah, the VC, and the funny thing is, like, when you look at the VC thing, I'll include the tweet in our post before, but like, dude, it's Jimmy VC. Like, what do you want from this guy? I mean, he came in with a lot of fanfare. Obviously, there was like a whole big bidding war, and he signed with the Rangers, and he had like an okay first season, and since then it's been sort of diminishing returns. What do you want from this guy? I don't understand. Like, well, and the thing is, like, if you've been following, I mean, how could you not? But like, the Leafs are all concerned. But, well, first of all, they blew that 5-1 lead to the Senators, which was the greatest gift anybody could have been given this season. It was just a lot of fun to laugh and point at them. But they're not getting anything from their second line, which is John Tavares and William Nylander. And Steve Simmons had the knives out today. And so I guess rather than pick on those guys, you pick on Jimmy VC, I guess. I don't know. It's very the whole thing is just very, it's like a whole other world. I don't get it. Meanwhile, you know, the Stars can't play because there's no power in Texas and people are like freezing on the streets, and it's like, you never hear about it. It's, you know, they got two games on Lake Tahoe this weekend. Nobody cares. There's no big story about them. Yeah, I guess they'll be on TV or whatever. Who knows? But like, I don't know, but we got to worry about Jimmy VC being talked to by Manny
Bonnetry. I think I would have put all my money on Pierre LeBrun to be kind of the most insufferable during this thing. And he very close.
I mean, oh, yeah.
He was the leader in the clubhouse a couple weeks ago when he tweeted about how the Canadian division is like the greatest thing. I mean, the tweet was just so unbelievably lacked self-awareness that it was just hilarious. Yeah, like, dude, the Canadian division has not been fun for anybody because it's four very bad teams playing hockey against like two good teams. And then there's also a couple of mediocre teams with good players in there too. Like, there's a reason why the Maple Leafs are in first place right now. Like, it's, and let me tell you, it wouldn't be the same if they were playing in a different division. But Chris Johnston he's, you know, in this race for being the most insufferable Canadian media member is kind of coming out of nowhere to be that guy, and he's doing it in just like the strangest, creepiest way. It's just here's a picture of Jimmy VC talking to Manny Malhotra the third time in 10 days.
Yeah. Johnston's been this way ever since the Tavares signing, and I'm not saying that because I'm still mad about it, but I did notice that. Like, he was almost like, before that he was very kind of even keeled, and then all of a sudden that happened, and he just dove right into the Tavares beat and was like chronicling his, I'm surprised he didn't put a book out or something about his first year as a Leaf. And since then he's been very like Leaf centric, and it's been really a shame. You know, I watch the headlines every week, you know, Sunday morning. I always watch the headline segment from the night before his Hockey Night in Canada. Oh, and then, you know, Friedman again, like, they make a big deal about Tavares and Sam Gagne buying this Toronto youth team. And it's like, yeah, I mean, that's cool for the kids. As long as the kids get like, you know, cool equipment and the right direction, that's great for them. But like, if you're not one of the kids or one of their parents, like, do you really care? Like, I don't, you know. And if those two guys weren't with the Leafs, if let's say Tavares was still an Islander and Sam Gagne was still an Oiler, and they were buying, you know, their respective communities, you know, junior teams, would they even get maybe a passing mention? I mean, maybe Gagne, I guess, but if he was still in Canada, but probably not. I mean, Sam Gagne has played for every team in the league. So that's the
whole point. Like, that people, when I read that thing about Friedman and that last thought of his blog, which like, I look forward to reading that. This is the disappointing thing. It's like, look, Elliot, we don't get any true, like, deep dive stuff like in America about the NHL. Like, so it's kind of important for us to like read this to keep up. Like, oh, wow. Like, you know, maybe the Islanders have a chance to trade for Mikael Granlund, because he's, you know, you mentioned him, and like he's being shopped around. Like that's where this stuff kind of comes from. And this is stuff we like to talk about because we're fans. Like that's why, you know, we read this column. And then when the whole point of like why people are upset, like is not just because you're spending time talking about the Oilers or the Leafs all the time. It's these kind of things. It's the fact that the Toronto Marlboros got a 350 word lead in a column in the middle of the season. Like if this happened in July and you wanted to write about it, good on you. Who cares? Who cares that Jimmy VC is talking to Manny Malhotra? Who cares that, you know, Jake Muzzin is now a member of the Leafs, officially a member of the Leafs leadership group? Like nobody gives a shit. Like this is the problem.
You know, it's funny when you put those three things in order, and there's three things from two separate guys, the Muzzin thing, the leadership council, whatever, the Jimmy VC thing, and then the Toronto Marlboros thing. You know who all of those three things sound like they came out of? Pierre Maguire. That is all Pierre Maguire all the time. Like you could see him if this was a Penguins game and like, you know, Crosby bought the local Pittsburgh junior team, how many minutes would he spend in that broadcast talking about Crosby buying that team and how big a deal it was? Meanwhile, literally nobody cares. Nobody watching that broadcast at that moment cares. Or if, you know, again, John Marino, you know, he's got an A on his sweater now, Doc. He's a member of the Penguins leadership council now, just a big step for the second year play. Like, okay, great. You know, I don't know.
But it's that's just, the point. It's like, those are the guys we have to listen to because this is the way the sport is covered in America.
We're stuck with them.
Yeah. We got to listen to the Ryan Callahan and, you know, the NBC studio make the same joke about to Ryan Callahan that they made to Patrick Sharp and Anson Carter. Like, here's a video of you scoring on Brian Boucher. Everybody, like, let's laugh. Oh, and by the way, have you guys ever heard the story about when Randy Jones blocked a shot into an empty net? Because guess what? Everyone who's watched this broadcast has 700 times. Good. It's such a parody of itself. It really is.
It really is. It's both stale. I don't want to get off on the whole thing, but we've talked about NBC. And yeah, they've added Ryan Callahan. I mean, he looks nice in a suit, but he's not really bringing much to the whole party. It's the same kind of thing, and it's just the same production that we've gotten forever.
So. And also, you know what?
This is our lot in life.
Sad is that, like, the guys say. The sad thing is that, yeah, it really is. And the sad thing is that, like, there are some really good play-by-play and color analysts out there that, like, if you watch, like, NHL TV or whatever, you're like, why isn't this person calling, like, in the studio? Like, why isn't, when you listen, like, John Forslund, who does NBC games, you're like, Why aren't like people like that like given more of a chance? Because it's like it really does matter to like listen to these people talk. Like it just brings such a better it's not like it, like if you watched the Bruins versus the Flyers on NBC Sports in 2014 and then immediately watched the Bruins versus the Flyers on NBC Sports from 2020, like right next to each other, it would be the same exact thing. Like the same exact thing. They'd be talking about the same thing. They would have, you know, Patrice Bergeron shift counter in the score bug for God knows what reason. And then the studio show would be the same. It just instead of, you know, Ryan Callahan, it would be whoever Ryan Callahan was back then. It would be like Aaron Ward or someone. It was just like, it's so sad that they haven't been able to think outside the box. And then when you do watch these Canadian guys, you're like, holy crap, you're even more insufferable than the people that I hate here. Like, it's just crazy.
Yeah, that is true. That is very true. Yeah. I never thought of it that way. If you put them side by side.
Yeah, like when you watch Hockey Night in Canada, you're like, oh, this is great. Like, I love watching Hockey Night in Canada. I love getting this information. And then within 2 minutes of the intermission show, you're like, holy crap, I do not need to hear Jeff Marek talk about the Victoria Salmon Kings and like for the next 6 minutes. Jesus Christ, turn it off.
Well, or you know, you get like guys like Brian Burke or Kelly Rudy talking about, you know, the toughness and the grit factor that the Flames need to play more gritty. They need to be more gritty and show some more fight while they're down, you know, 3-1 to the Jets after the first period. Like, okay, sure. I'm sure they definitely need to be more gritty. That's what they're talking about right now in the locker room. Bring the grit. Sure.
Bring the grit.
Anyway, well, I didn't expect that Brian Burke segue to lead into 15 minutes of media talk, but it's good. We like this kind of stuff because it is a bit of a you know, long road for us American hockey fans. I think
it's
important
too, because it's like, if you talked about it to your friend who doesn't watch hockey, who's an NBA or MLB or
anything, oh yeah,
like they wouldn't get that, like why this Chris Johnston tweet is so ridiculous. But there actually is like a community of people out there who, like, if you bring them together, you're like, oh man, like no, and when this community does its best work is at in moments of like the Leafs losing losing a 5-1 lead to the Senators. Like that's when these people, they kind of bubble to the surface and you see some just absolute Twitter geniuses coming out, like the person saying that that horrible thing with the Coyotes was a false flag to distract everyone from the Leafs. Like yeah. It's just like these, it's nice to see like that, like you're not alone when you're that mad at, you know, Darren Drager, you know, being up to his old shtick.
Definitely don't sleep on Senators Twitter. It's a very low-key, great Twitter. Like, those guys have been beaten down. Bonks Mullet might be my favorite follow on Twitter. There's a lot of people there that are so funny because they've been so beaten down. And they're a lot like us, you know? I mean, little brother team, they just love sticking it to the big brother all the time. And who doesn't love sticking it to the Leafs? It's a great thing. So I definitely recommend that. And hopefully the Senators can do it again tonight because they're playing again tonight. And it's a whole big thing. And I don't want to get into it. Okay. We will be back next week. We're going to have a cool interview coming up in a few minutes with a guy named Anthony DeVino, who's from a company named Foco, who is making – they make collectibles, sports collectibles. They're making a bobblehead of Matt Barzal that you are definitely going to want to check out because it's pretty darn cool. I know everybody's got a million bobbleheads, but trust me, this one – has a lot of cool features, and it looks a lot like him, and you're going to want to pre-order it. So listen to the interview. We're going to talk with him for a few minutes. It's going to be really cool. Where can everybody find you on Twitter?
The Big Lebowski with two E's.
Follow Mike at The Big Lebowski with two E's. Read Lighthouse Hockey every single day if anyone's up to date. Islanders news and discussion. Listen to our other podcast, PT Isles with Joe and Noel. And yeah, that's about it. I think we covered everything, right? I mean, it's been a pretty wild week. It's been hard to kind of keep track of everything.
Yeah, and we gave the monthly deep dive into why we're so jaded against TSN and Sportsnet. So that's very important.
It is very important.
It's very therapeutic. It is actually important for us personally. Like, definitely, it's very important to throw those things out off my chest because, like, just when I see those things, when I saw that Jimmy Vesey picture, I actually got mad, and I needed to be able to have an outlet for that anger.
Yes. And only us, only me and the people listening to this will actually know why. And we'll feel the same anger, which is really a funny thing. So, yeah. So we'll be back next week with some more gripes. And hopefully the Islanders will be back with some more points. And we will talk to you then. All right. Thanks a lot. Talk to you later. Bye-bye. We are going to be joined right now by a special guest. His name is Anthony DeVino. And he's with a company called Foco that has a selection of cool collectibles for sports fans, and they have a new bobblehead line that includes Islanders star Matt Barzal. There's not a ton of Islanders stuff out there, and so I got very excited when I saw Barzal getting his own collectible because this is really, really cool, and we're going to talk with Anthony for a few minutes about this. Anthony, how are you?
Doing well, guys. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm excited to tell you guys about our Islanders products and especially this bubble hockey bobblehead.
Yeah. Oh, well, so there you go. Like, so this is a bubble hockey bobblehead. So it's picture the bobblehead, but he's on a bubble hockey platform, like a base, right? Which is really cool.
Yeah. So, that idea was kind of a play on, obviously the game from like the '80s and '90s. And then also last year when the playoffs were in the bubble. So we were trying to move fast enough to get it where we can launch it while they were still playing in the bubble. The bobblehead process can take a little longer than expected sometimes. So unfortunately, we didn't get to launch it during the bubble hockey playoff / championship. But I mean, as you saw, they came out so cool and so great. We had to find a way to launch them.
They do look really cool. And yeah, so he's, you know, imagine Barzal. I'll include a link, obviously, in the post when we put this up at Lighthouse Hockey. But yeah, it's a bobblehead. First of all, it looks a lot like Matt, which is something that a lot of bobbleheads don't. I have a couple of Islanders bobbleheads downstairs, and they're kind of hit or miss. I don't know. There was one from about 30 years ago that Clark Gillies was wearing a helmet. I still don't know how that got passed the folks in charge. But it looks like Matt, and he's kind of in, you know, in stride, and it's got the handle down, so you can like move him like a bubble hockey player.
Yeah, it doesn't like twist and turn, but you can move it like forward and backward.
That is really cool. And it's got like a back and everything.
You know, as you were saying, with some of like the giveaway bobbleheads, you know, those aren't always the best quality, and the likeness is somewhat off. So a lot of our, majority of our bobbleheads are sold at retail, either at foco.com or at the team stores. Unfortunately, you know, with COVID, fans can't go to the stadiums right now, so they're not in the stores now. But if there was a normal season, they would be available at the team shop. So we really do hold ourselves to a higher standard when it comes to the likeness. We have to get approval from, you know, the NHL, PA, the league. Sometimes even the agent of the player gets involved. So it's really, it goes through a lot of approvals before we can actually launch it. So we really, really like to, you know, try to make it look as close to possible as the player.
It's pretty close. The hair in particular, I think, is whoever sculpted the hair really, really did a great job, because it really does look exactly like. And, you know, Barzal, you know, there's like a ton of like Alex Ovechkin stuff out there, because he already kind of looks like a bit of a cartoon character. Like, he's got a very, you know, distinctive face, and he's got, you know, you can kind of change it and mold it into kind of funny different ways. Barzal isn't really kind of like that, but I really think you kind of nailed it. So I am curious about that process. So, you know, obviously you have to license it with the team, with the league and all that stuff. And then did you like 3D model his face based on a picture? Is that how it works?
So it all starts, we have at work, we have like a group chat called the Bobble Tank. So people are always pitching bobble ideas in there. We have in-house designers who will draw up the artwork. And then we work with our factories overseas, and the designers are going back with them, back and forth with them. It starts with a clay mold. And then, you know, the designers see the initial clay mold, then they're, you know, doing critiques like move the eyes up a little bit, put the ears over there, you know, widen the nose, like do this with the lips. So they're going back, you know, 3 to 4 times with the clay mold before it even gets painted to make sure that the face is how we want it. And then, you know, we go to paint, and then you can get a better idea of it when it is painted, and you can still make, you know, critiques and comments. So we're working hand in hand with, you know, our factories to make sure that it's to the standard that we want it to be before we even launch it.
It's very cool. What size is it? Like, I'm looking at the picture right now.
That one's probably a little bigger. Usually they're 8 inches. That one might be 10 inches.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Cause it's got the whole stand and everything.
Yep.
Yeah, it's really neat. And so, you know, like I said before, like, you know, as Islanders fans, we don't look for a ton of memorabilia. I'm a toy fan myself. I'm sitting at a desk right now. I got G.I. Joes on either side of me. I got a Transformer over here. I got my Islanders starting lineups here and elsewhere in the house. And you know, there's not a ton of Islanders like bobbleheads or collectibles out there. So I'm curious, this is probably going to come out wrong, but fortunately Matt Barzal doesn't listen to this, but like, how did you come to choose him? Because you have other guys. I mean, you have Ovechkin. I believe there's a Tyler Seguin. I think there's a Patrice Bergeron, or is it Brad Marchand, one of the others. So like, these are some big name guys, and like to have Barzal in there is actually really kind of a cool honor in a way.
Yeah. I mean, Barzal is super young, and from what I know about Islander fans, they're always referring to him as a superstar. You know, he's going to be the future. We work with some of other affiliates that are, you know, they're Islanders fans. And when we told them, you know, what Islander would you like to see made? Everyone just kept saying Barzal, Barzal, Barzal. assuming he's a fan favorite.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I think he's only like 23. Right. And I was looking up some of the stats before this. And I mean, I think he has 15 points in 15 games already this year.
Yeah.
Like 15 points, like obviously goals and assists added up.
Yeah, he just had a 9-game streak snapped last night. So yeah, no, this has been a great season for him. And yeah, no, we've been waiting for Barzal stuff. It's just now is finally his time to get his own stuff.
12 assists. Yeah, and I'm not sure how you guys feel about it, but a lot of people like the fisherman jersey, so we're always getting requests for that.
Hmm. Oh, so you mean there could be like a version, like an alternate sort of version with the fisherman?
Yeah, so I mean, this Matt Barzal is a part of the bubble hockey series, but we can always do like an individual, maybe with a, you know, the fisherman jersey, and maybe do something, the base or the background is more Islanders thematic. I know, I think this is the last year for the Collie.
Yes, this is the last year for the Coliseum.
Yeah, so maybe... you know, maybe we can do something with that would do pay homage to the Collie on the base. We know we like talking to you guys, we really try to see what the fan wants. We want to make it super memorable, super collectible, that, you know, once you see that bobblehead like on your desk or, you know, in your house somewhere, that, you know, it brings a smile to your face remembering the good Islanders moments.
The fit, that's very cool. And it's nice that you guys give that extra time to kind of get that, you know, input. I will say this though, the Fisherman logo is, very divisive amongst the fan base.
Yeah. I heard it. You love it or you hate it.
Yeah, basically. Some people have started hating it and now love it and vice versa. I noticed you have, a sort of like, logos that are put together by like bricks. And I'm telling you right now, if you did a Fisherman one of those, I would buy it in a heartbeat. Like that would be the coolest thing. So, you know,
I can actually write that down in my notebook and pitch that.
I'm sorry, I forgot the name of the bricks, but it's pretty cool. Like, I don't want to.
They're mini nano bricks. So our line is called Brixels. So, I mean, we have like college stadiums, NFL stadiums. Yeah. A lot of people like the MLB stadiums. We have players,
but like also players and logos. Yeah, it's really neat. So
yeah, if you think the Fisherman would be a hit, and if we have the license to do it, we'll make it.
Well, I have no idea who owns that license, to be honest. I assume the Islanders do, but they're very, very, very.
You might need a different license for like a retro logo.
Right, yeah.
But I mean, we have a bunch of the licenses, so it really, I don't think it should be an issue.
That would be pretty cool. Well, I'll be on the lookout for that. so we're going to put a link where you can pre-order the bobblehead. So these are pre-orders now. So when do you guys anticipate the real release?
So these will probably ship in late May, early June. Right now on the website, it says ships no later than, so it always could come earlier, but we just do that date to be safe. But So the bobbleheads, I said, you know, they take about 45 to 60 days for like mass production. Then we boat them overseas. They go to the ports in California. We have a warehouse in Arkansas where we do all our shipping. So then they eventually ship from Arkansas.
That's cool. And like, is the pre-order time period like limited, or like even after the pre-order, you'll be able to buy it?
What we're doing is this one's numbered out of 360. So we're really trying to increase the collectability of these. I'm not sure if you know, but there's some bobblehead collectors out there that are super, super big on the numbering and stuff like that. And we want to just make it more valuable so that people that do buy it, you know, they feel that they're, you know, it's even more special that, you know, they're one of 360 that have this bobblehead.
Right. All right. Well, you heard it right there. So do not hesitate. If you're interested, click the link, pre-order it today. It's extremely cool. I know, you know, like you said, bobbleheads are always given out. People see them all the time. They're in stores. These are really, really cool. And you're going to want to take a look at this because it's really something that is going to stand. Even if you have an entire room full of bobbleheads, this one is definitely going to stand out, and it's really cool. And it's Matt Barzell. Who doesn't love Matt? We all love Matt Barzell. Anthony, thank you so much for coming on. This has been great. Really appreciate all the info, and good luck with the bobbleheads.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. And more Islander stuff is to come. So I'll definitely keep you guys in the loop and make sure everyone from Lighthouse Hockey and the following knows about where to get it.
Awesome. Thanks a lot. Talk to you later.